Campus 103.7 presents a collaboration between me, Patricia Salomone, and my friend Stephen Mangione for the reviewing of the book The Path to Redemption, A Journey to the End of the Earth by Stephen Mangione. This is another review in the series A Book, A Thousand Stories. Welcome back for another episode of the review of the book The Path to Redemption by Stephen Mangione. You may remember that towards the end of last week's episode, James and Maria were leaving the Meseta. As often happens to people attempting the Camino, Maria developed stiff calf muscles. Slowly and with some effort, our two made it to Mazarife, where Maria intended to visit the local Centro de Salud, after checking in to an albergue. To their surprise, Pepe, the hospitalero at the albergue, told them that he was a physiotherapist himself, and before Maria and James had the chance to refuse, he was at work in manipulating Maria's calf muscles. Having done so, with a grin, Pepe said Maria would be fine. In fact, she now felt good enough, so they walked out to a small tavern to have a delicious seafood paella. Perhaps this is the best known dish of the Spanish cuisine, but there is so much more to Spanish food. Let us again listen to Stephen to hear what he can tell us on the subject.
I have already spoken about Spanish cuisine in a previous episode, but this is a vast subject as the cuisine in Spain is so varied and rich. There are all the well-known Spanish dishes like paella, gazpacho, tortilla, and of course the very famous jamón ibérico, which reaches its peak in the jamón de bellota, obtained from pigs fed almost exclusively on acorns. The cuisine varies from region to region. So, for instance, in Navarra and the Basque country, a large part of the cuisine is centered around vegetables, with dishes like pimientos del piquillo, peppers, asparagus, alcachofas, artichokes, and the very special goat's cheese called roncal. Whereas in Castilla y León, there are the cordero, which is lamb, cochinillo asado, roast piglet, sopa de ajo, garlic soup, and in Galicia plenty of fish and seafood, such as the pulpo a feira, octopus with potatoes and sweet paprika, gambas al ajillo, prawns with garlic, boquerones, anchovies, and pimientos de padrón, grilled peppers, and the caldo gallego, Galician soup. And of course, prior to any meal, one will have tapas or pinchos as a starter, and sometimes as the meal itself. In the pilgrim hostels, one is served three-course meals which are simple but wholesome and good, for which one pays as little as 10 euros, which might also include a bottle of wine.
While they enjoyed eating their paella, their conversation turned to home cooking. "Do you like cooking?" James asked. So they found out that they both enjoyed cooking, but preferred to do so in the weekend, when they were free from work duties. At this, James remarked while looking at Maria very intensely, "We may have to be looking at a more coordinated effort, especially if we are to share the same kitchen." This was, Maria realized, his marriage proposal. A very unusual marriage proposal, to which her enthusiastic reply was, "Yes." That night, in their respective bunk beds at the albergue, sleep did not come easy to both James and Maria. Each thought intensely about their promise of a married life together. James became painfully aware that sooner or later he would have to confide in her, tell her of his inability to avoid the accident, and explain about the panic that had overcome him. Would Maria understand and still accept him as her spouse? After breakfast, they resumed their walk. On the Meseta, it was very cold early in the morning, but as the day went through, it got warmer and warmer. As they passed by a large cross standing on a vantage point, they could see the city of Astorga, and from that point, it took them an hour to reach the town by the early afternoon. Both had one desire: to share a room where they could again be together and alone. The chosen hotel was the Hotel Gaudi in the Plaza Mayor, to one side of the cathedral, just opposite the Palacio Episcopal. The author tells us that the hotel is named after the creator of the palacio, Gaudi, who was the architect. Although this is one of the famous architect's lesser-known buildings, nevertheless, it is a source of pride for the city.
The Palacio Episcopal in the city of Astorga is one of Gaudi's most famous buildings outside his native Catalonia. It was built between 1889 and 1913. But Gaudi fell out with the authorities, and the building was completed under another architect. As its name implies, it is the palace of the bishopric of Astorga. The bulk of Gaudi's work is in Catalonia, and principally Barcelona. His most famous buildings are several residential buildings, such as the Casa Milà and the Casa Batlló, the Parc Güell, and most importantly of all, his masterpiece, the Basilica of the Sagrada Familia in the center of Barcelona. This was conceived by devotees of Saint Joseph, who wanted to build a temple in his honor. The first stone was laid in 1882. Gaudi devoted his entire life to it, but it was only some 20% complete when he died in 1926. The style is a unique synthesis of late Spanish Gothic and Art Nouveau architecture. When it is finished in 2030 to 2032, according to the latest time estimates, it will have 18 spires, which represent the 12 apostles, the Virgin Mary, the four evangelists, while the tallest one, at 177 meters, will represent Jesus Christ. It has three grand facades: the Nativity facade on the east, dedicated to the birth of Jesus; the Passion facade on the west, dedicated to the Passion, death and resurrection of Christ; and the Glory facade on the south, dedicated to the glorious nature of Christ after his death. it is a must for every visitor to Barcelona to visit. In fact, Gaudi himself had predicted that people will come from all over the world to see it, and he was right.
Opposite Gaudi's Palacio Episcopal, and finally alone in a hotel room that afternoon, they threw themselves into each other's arms. They made love, and time stood still. Afterwards, exhausted, they both fell into a satisfied sleep. It was evening time when they woke up, and both felt quite hungry. The hotel's special menu that evening was the Maragato, which turned out to be the most unusual meal that they had throughout their walk so far. Astorga is the main center for the Maragatera people. But why not call upon our author to enlighten us on who these people are, and on what is so unusual about their ways and their cuisine?
The Maragateria is a region in the province of León, where lives a relatively small ethnic and cultural community with distinctive customs and architecture. Maragato women used to wear very striking regional dress that made them stand out. There are many theories about their origin, but none have been proven. They were different from the neighboring people, more because of their economic and mercantile activity of traveling salesmen, but they have not been recognized as a different ethnic group by the authorities. The cocido maragato is a meal typical of the farmers of the region. It brings together the best products of the area, beans, cabbage, and various meats, amongst others. The order in which the different courses are taken is unusual. It starts off with a dish of at least 7 different meats, mainly pork, but also chicken, beef, and several others. Following this, the vegetables are served next, followed by soup and finally custard. The most plausible explanation for the unusual order is that the meats would have been burned if served after the other dishes. One other theory is that on occasions the men would have to leave the table in a hurry, perhaps to defend their village, and thus the most nutritious food was served first.
I am grateful to the author for his interventions and explanations, and I hope our listeners too are fascinated by how, as we read through the pages of Stephen Mangione's book, The Path to Redemption, we get to know so much about the route along the Camino Francés, about the towns with their cathedrals, about the scenery that changes as the pilgrims walk through hills and forests and through the flat meseta with the mountains in the distance. We also learn about the wines of the region, as well as the different food, and we become aware of the Spanish ways of life, their late-night frolicking, their music and songs. Hence, by inserting this in my series, A Book, A Thousand Stories, I feel that the programs are being made more interesting. At the Hotel Gaudi, and after another passionate night of lovemaking, James woke up early as the sun was rising. He was aware that they had a long day of walking ahead, as they would start climbing the Montes de Leon. He hoped it would not be too hard on Maria. He observed her as she slept still. What an amazing and indeed providential thing had happened to him. He had found the love of his life. This was not what he was expecting when he undertook the walk to atone for his misdeed. Again, the thought of it came to torment him. He was terrified of the moment when he would have to tell Maria about it. Rather half-heartedly, they left the Hotel Gaudi at Astorga to proceed on their walk, for they were aware that their next stop, Fontebodon, a small mountain hamlet, they were quite unlikely to find a hotel. They would have to content themselves with an albergue and once more be separated for the night. Along their way, they passed by little hamlets with romantic names like Murias de Regivaldo or Santa Catalina de Somoza and Rabanal de Camino. Like many other pilgrims, they stopped for lunch at El Ganso, but then proceeded uphill till they reached Fontebodon. Here, they discovered extraordinary buildings with thatched roofs, the payosas.
Payosas are traditional buildings to be found in the northwest of Spain, principally in the provinces of Galicia and Asturias. They originated in pre-Hispano-Celtic times. They are usually circular or oval in shape. They have a diameter of up to 20 meters, and they are built to withstand the severe weather of the mountains. The walls are built in stone, while the roofs are made of straw on a wooden frame, and they are conical in shape. The space inside is divided into separate areas for the family and for their animals. The payosa had its own bread oven, workshop and a loom. There was no chimney. The smoke from the kitchen fire simply seeped through the thatch. Only the eldest couple of the extended family had their own bedroom. All the others slept in the hayloft. The name may originate from paja, which is the Spanish word for straw. They are some of the most fascinating buildings I encountered along the Camino, especially in the little mountain village of Osebreiro on the border of Galicia.
Fontebodon was a magical village, perched up high above the clouds. An evening mist was starting to swirl up from the valley below, and the buildings and an ancient stone cross on a pedestal in the middle of the village had assumed a ghostly appearance. The caldo de gallego soup was served to them in one of the many taverns, and they had no choice but to lodge at one of the two albergues, which of course meant no privacy. They were sorely aware of this, and Maria confessed that these periods of abstinence only make me want you all the more. Back in the albergue, Maria soon fell into a restful sleep, but James tossed and turned, having terrible nightmares in which Maria found out about his guilty secret. He woke up in a cold sweat. Still, he could not get himself to speak up. They left the albergue early in the morning and proceeded uphill until they reached the Cruz de Hierro.
The Cruz de Hierro, or Cross of Iron, is a small iron cross mounted atop a tall wooden pole at the pass of Mount Hirago, at the highest point of the Camino Francés, near the hamlet of Fontebadon. A large pile of small stones and pebbles has accumulated at its base, because of the tradition for every pilgrim to bring a small stone from his native country and to deposit it at the foot of the cross. The tradition is for the pilgrim to throw the stone onto the pile while giving his back to the cross to symbolize the fact that he is leaving the past behind. There are several theories about its origin. One is that it serves as a landmark which can be seen even in heavy snowfalls. It was erected in the 11th century by Gauselmo, the abbot of Fontebadon. It is a place that evokes emotion and introspection. Many pilgrims, apart from depositing their stone, also leave little mementos or messages attached to the wooden base, and they stop to say a small prayer for whatever it is they feel or need. It had a great effect on me the first time I walked by it, and this has repeated itself on each of the subsequent visits.
Here, high in the Montes de Leon, under the Iron Cross, each one of our travelers said a private prayer. Maria prayed that she could forgive herself for not having been sufficiently vigilant over her poor mother. James prayed for forgiveness for his misdeed, hoping that his life with Maria would not be jeopardized by it. So with James and Maria standing under the Iron Cross and in the presence of the Mount of Pebbles holding hopes and messages from all over the world, Stephen and I leave our listeners again until we meet once more next week on Monday at 18:30. Please do remember that you can listen to a repeat of today's episode on Thursday at 15 hours, always on Compass 103.7. Thank you.